This is Ann Cox interviewing Hubert Holland on October 27th, 2003. Could you just start out by telling me a little bit about yourself?
You mean you're not going to lead the questions?
I will eventually.
My name's Hubert Holland, and I grew up in this vicinity of Breathitt County here. I'm 71 years old. And,
have you always lived here?
Yes. Okay. Maybe for 6 months at a time or something away from here.
Mm-hmm. When you lived away, where did you live?
I lived in Dayton for a short spell, worked at Frigidaire. And I worked in Lexington for about 5 months, and I lived in Winchester.
What years did you work over there?
When I worked in Dayton, it was 54. The latter part of 54, and the latter part of 55, and the first part of 56.
Can you talk a little bit about what it was like growing up here?
It was pretty hard growing up here. There wasn't no big eyes and little me's. Everybody had a hard time growing up in this country. They pretty well had to work for what they got, and most of what they got came off of the farm. Killed their own hogs. Grew the corn, canned vegetables out of the garden, milked the cows, and even back in the 40s, we used to milk two or three cows, and we'd have to hang our milk in the well to keep it cool. We got electricity in about 47, but life was pretty rough here at that time.
Did you have many brothers and sisters?
10 brothers and sisters.
Do most of them stay around here?
About, three or four of us stayed in the county. I have one sister in Oregon, one in California, one in Texas, one in Florida, one sister in Ohio, and a brother in Florida. And I got a brother who lives in Louisville, and a brother and a sister lives in this county.
How did your parents make a living?
Off the farm.
Off the farm. How did you make a living once I started working?
Mm-hmm. Well, I first worked at a funeral home. Short spell, and then got drafted into the Army. And after I came back out of the Army, I went to, like I said, Frigidaire, and worked about 5 months, 5.5 months. And I came back and worked in a Kentucky food store up here at Jackson. Basically all the rest of my working time. And then I ran for magistrate or justice of the peace, and I was elected there 12 years, and I ran for jailer, and I was elected to that office, and then I retired. But in the meantime, I stayed in the Kentucky National Guard for almost 30 years. And I also, in the meantime, I farmed some. We had 6 kids of our own, and you had to shuffle around. Mm-hmm.
How did you meet your wife?
In church one night down here on the creek.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
Was I when I met her?
Yeah.
Well, that's probably about 21, 22.
So you hadn't known her growing up?
Well, her family was off the creek here, but They moved to Hamilton, Ohio. And her dad died up there in Hamilton, and her mother moved back here. Mm-hmm. And that's when we became acquainted. Of course, I knew her mother and dad before that, because they lived here on the creek for a while before they went to Hamilton.
What year did you get married?
In 55. May the 13th of 55.
Did she ever work?
Yes, she worked in a factory down at Campton, and she was a aide at Breathitt High for a while. And there's a little factory over here in Jackson called Prestolite, and she worked there for a while after the kids all got in school and everything.
Why do you think you've chosen to live here for most of your life?
Well, I enjoy living here. Times are a lot better than they were when I was growing up here. Now we can have about as much anything here that you can go away from here and have. If you're established, you know, a young kid growing up here anymore, the jobs are not readily available to them. But if you hang on, sooner or later something will come open that you can get a job and make a living at. Mm-hmm. And I think that I just enjoy the people, the type of environment we have. If you don't like the weather in Kentucky today, you wait till tomorrow and it'll surely change, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not hot all the time, it's not cold all the time. So it's, I think, a good place to live.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember a time when a lot of people were leaving?
Yes. Back in the 40s, a lot of people, of course, work began to pick up. That was in the early 40s, work began to pick up in the northern states. Mm-hmm. Due to war materials being manufactured. A lot of people left here to get them, they called them defense jobs. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of our neighbors went to Dayton and Cincinnati, other places. Even some of them went to work on army bases to build barracks and things. Things begin to pick up pretty good.
Do you feel like when a lot of those people left that this area changed? How do you think it changed?
Well, the neighbors begin to move out and go north, and little farms begin to pick up to be up for sale. A lot of times they'd sell their house furniture, what little they had. And so if they had a garden out, they'd sell their garden enough for a bus ticket north to Cincinnati, Newport, Dayton, numerous places. They'd leave here with what they was carrying in their suitcase and a bus ticket, and they'd sell everything else out here. I'd see farms right now around here sold for $500 or $600, it now goes into the thousands of dollars, you know. This hollow road up through here used to have 8 or 10 houses on it. And shortly after that, there was 1 or 2 houses on it. And all of the places around was just like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This school used to have a big enrollment, 40 or 50. And by the time the 50s came around, they had 10 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
So it affected a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the region was worse off for all of those people leaving? Or?
Well, Well, no, I wouldn't say it's worse off. I think the people that left was probably better off at the time because there was no employment for them. They lived from hand to mouth, from day to day. They could go out there and in the early 40s, they'd get 50, 75 cents a day for the work. They would work a day for a 5 pound of bacon, or they'd get these ration stamps during the Second World War for their sugar, and they didn't have the money to buy the sugar, you know. They get the stamp for the sugar, but they didn't have. Times was really hard at that time here. So I think the people that left made a wise decision.
Is that why you went to work in Dayton for a while?
That was the reason, looking for greener pasture.
Did a lot of people come back here?
Not really. A lot of those people that left had a bad taste in their mouth for this area. They got up there and they got used to the modern convenience, and when they left, they had their outdoor toilets. They had no electricity, no running water, and they looked on this as a bad place to live. And a lot of them didn't even want to come back to visit. They just got a bad taste in their mouth for this locale.
So, if you're 71, you were born in 32? Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Just making sure.
I was checking on your math.
Do you have any memories when you were small of this time when people were leaving in the 40s? What you thought about it, or
I thought that everybody was the same way, you know. Everything around here was about the same, and we didn't have a vehicle to go nowhere in. My dad never did have a driver's license. So we didn't get to go nowhere, but it's a big family of us. We was all happy. Like I said, about everything come off the farm. If you couldn't buy a goat store and get a frying chicken then, about the only meats you had was when you killed hogs, you had fresh meat. Then after that, you had to, you'd start curing your meat, and everything after that was smoked or dried or salted down. You didn't get much fresh meat at that time, which, you know, was better than we thought it was better than the salted or cured meats. It was pretty rough.
When did you turn this into your house?
It was turned into the house about 53. I didn't turn it into it. I bought it from a neighbor that did it. And then I bought it in 60. No, it was probably about 56. Then I bought it in 64. So he lived here 7 or 8 years.
Can you talk about what it used to look like when you used to go to school here?
What school was like? Yeah. We had, when I was going here, we had one teacher. And she taught all 8 grades. So one of the grades might have 2 or 3 students in it, another one might have 4 or 5. It was all the way from, we called it the primer, up until the 8th. And and they would call you up. Had seats in front of the teacher, your class, when it came time for your class to go up, you'd all go up there and sit in front of the teacher, and she'd give you assignments and do a little work on the blackboard, and then she would send you back and call up number grade 2 or 3 or 4. And I don't know how it worked, but it did work. Some of them done pretty good in, after they left here, you know. I guess a little, when you're sitting there while they was working with maybe the 4th or 5th grade and you was in the 3rd grade, a little what she was talking to them would rub off on you.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to work pretty well. But by the time I got to the 8th grade, I was the only student, I believe, going to be in the 8th grade. Mm-hmm. And I was sent to Breathitt High at Jackson, and they had a 8th grade class that came in there. And I walked from here to 1812 down there, which is almost 4 miles,
mm-hmm.
for, through my 8th grade and 3 years of high school. And then in my senior year, between my junior and senior year, they built a road up here and graveled it. And a school bus came on my last year. But I walked out of here 4 years, mm-hmm. which is almost 4 miles each way. That's almost 8 miles a day of walking to school to catch the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd ride, and then you'd leave here before daylight carrying a flashlight. And winter time, be mud to your knees. Get out, this pure old mud truck rut. It's all you had to walk in.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when school enrollment started picking up?
Never did pick up here at this school.
Oh.
It always went down by the people leaving here.
Mm-hmm.
But at Breathitt High, my senior class, I think, was like around 48 or 50 people in my senior class. And then after that, they started getting bigger classes, but they started consolidating the schools,
mm-hmm.
and bringing them into town. And really, a lot of people in the early 40s didn't send their kids to school that much.
Mm-hmm.
They kept them out and made them work. You didn't have, I don't know if the law was in effect where they had to send them to school until they was 16 or 17, whatever it is. But anyway, a lot of people wouldn't make their kids go to school. But my dad, he would never take us out of school for nothing. Didn't matter how bad he needed our work, he wouldn't take us out of school for it.
So all of you went to school?
Yes.
Are you in the middle, or?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how it was when you went to school is that there are little schools.
A lot of little schools.
Yeah, and then eventually they consolidated.
They begin to consolidate them, tear them down, and sell the property.
Mm-hmm.
But, right on this creek from 1812 up to here, which is the route you just came in on, there was 2 schools.
Mm-hmm.
And from where you turned off at 205 down there to come up to here, I see you had Van Cleve, Blanton School, Strong Fork, and Camp Christie. There was 4 schools in that.
Mm-hmm.
So they were schools that every little 5 or 6 miles apart, there was a school.
Mm-hmm. How do you know how somebody would become a teacher back then?
Do I know what?
How people became teachers back then?
Well, for about 48 and 49, when you got out of high school, you could go to teaching school with a high school diploma. They would let you teach a year or two, then you had to improve as you went.
Mm-hmm.
You might teach 2 years on a high school diploma and then have to go to school or college for a year before they would renew your contract. But they used to teach right out of high school. Even before that, they could teach with an eighth grade education. I had a couple of aunts taught right here in this building back in the 20s, and they had an eighth grade education. So the requirements kept growing,
mm-hmm.
and the people kept qualifying themselves, so the teachers got better and better.
Do you have any, so my, let's see, I guess she'd be my great aunt, Margaret.
Margaret.
She taught here.
Right. She'd hire somebody to come before school started of the morning. Come in about a half hour before time for school and build fires. And she gave me a nickel a morning to come over here and build a fire before school started to have the house warm in the wintertime. But that nickel was pretty good though, you know. You could buy a pound of candy for a nickel.
Is that what you would do? Would you buy?
I'd go to the store, 15, 20 cents in my pocket, you know. You could buy that grocery mix candy for a nickel a pound, though.
Mm-hmm. How did you meet my grandfather?
Meet your grandfather?
Yeah, Rich.
Well, I grew up under him. His dad owned a place up the road here. And he used to own a big farm up this holler here. But it was just something I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
He was just there.
Yeah. Do you have any specific memories of him doing anything?
No.
Okay.
Other than seeing him when he'd come in, you know, come back for a visit or something, I'd see him, and he was always nice.
Mm-hmm. So he was about 20 years older than you? Is that right?
How old would he be?
I'm not sure.
He was older than Arnold and Orville, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So they was probably 8 or 10. They was probably 10 years older than me. One of them was.
Okay.
And he was, I don't know how much he would have been older than him. I'd say he'd been in his upper 80s, so.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 71.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they had my mom in 41, and they were about 20 years old, so they were about 10 years older than you, I guess. So.
And your mom was off of Trace Fork down here?
She was born there, but then they moved really soon after she was born.
What was her name?
Phyllis Back. At first, now she's Phyllis Cox.
Oh, that's your mother?
Yes, my mother.
She's Everett's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then who did Everett marry? Jividen?
No, Grace Martin.
Oh, Everett married Grace.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, is she dead?
Mm-hmm.
And Everett too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they died when.
Oh, okay. Then Everett married Sarah Jane, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
After my grandma died. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Everett came here to see me one time. It was after his wife died and before he married Sarah Jane down there.
Mm-hmm.
But we sit out here and talked a long time.
Mm-hmm.
His dad, this is from right here on up through there, that was his dad's home place. But back about that time, there's an awful lot of people in here lost their property to, you know, they couldn't buy them and couldn't pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, property changed hands in here at that time. I don't know, up the road here, the companies, a lot of companies went through and bought them up. They'd pay their taxes on a farm where they'd be in debt with their taxes and couldn't pay them. They'd pay their taxes on the farm for the real estate, I mean for the mineral rights.
Mm-hmm.
And they, up towards Perry County, they owned a lot of mineral rights on property. And the landowners couldn't keep them from going in and mining it out or nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Barney owned this property here, then he sold it, I guess, and went on up this way. But big two-story house up there he lived in.
Mm-hmm. When did that start happening, when people were losing their property?
In the 30s.
In the 30s?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, back in the Depression days. You could buy property in here for just about your price.
Mm-hmm.
We got a... My dad owned about 1,000 acres over there, and it was bought back in the 30s for $3 an acre.
Were the companies that bought the property, were those mining companies?
Mining companies and timber companies.
Okay.
This boundary right in here, and it might have been part of Everett's dad's place, might have been part of it. It was owned by Camp Christie Lumber Company. I'm sure it was. It was one company owned it all. That fork over here where you turned right instead of going left, that's where my family owned. Camp Christie Lumber Company owned it all in here, and when and Camp Christie Lumber Company was owned by KL&V Land Company, which is Kentucky Land and Veneer Company. And when they decided that they'd had all they needed or could extract all that they could off this land in here, they put it up for sale for $3 an acre. They came down to the where it's at now.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how, when you were growing up here, how, describe, like, the community? Like, how big was a community? Was it these little...
The community sort of developed around the school or the church.
Mm-hmm.
This school right here at one time had 200 and some kids going to school here, but it was bigger. It ran out that way farther. It was like another 80 or 90 foot longer than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it was on, that's when the Camp Christie Lumber Company was in here. All these hollers were full of people. And can you imagine 200 kids now, how far you'd have to go to round up that many? And that was just the ones that was going to school here. They was over there where my daughter lives now, which is right across the creek there. It was a doctor's office there. His name was Dr. Hogue. And after the lumber company was over with, he moved his office to Jackson. They had a commissary over there. A little dinky railroad track came up through there and went up that other fork, went into Blanton Bridge Fork. It was owned by the lumber company. Now when that left, a lot of the people left out of here because there was just too many people. There wasn't enough land, and no work. They had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a water towers on top of that hill. Over behind us there. And they had 6-inch water lines coming off of it. They'd pump their water up there and they'd wash them logs. They had steam engines. And they dug the footers down that them engines set onto the bedrock and built big rock piers up to set the engines on. It was a big job.
Mm-hmm.
That was all up here in the head of this holler. But now the community changed very fast after that. And then the tracts of land that was sold out was large tracts. And it didn't leave room for many other people other than renters, you know. Because one fellow would buy 1,000 acres and he'd have 2 or 3 renters on his property, and the next neighbor would be the same way. Mm-hmm. So it was a few landowners and a lot of renters.
How is community now?
The community now is a lot different. Because mm-hmm. used to, everybody knew everybody. You'd ride a mule down the road, you'd ride up and stop and talk to the neighbor. Now you pass their house at 40, 50 miles an hour. I've got neighbors here on the creek now within 2 miles of me that I've never saw or never been in their house. Mm-hmm. And it used to wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people would spend Sundays visiting, eating dinner with people, visit of a night. One or two of the in the neighborhood would have a radio, and several of them would go and listen to the news every night on the radio. Mm-hmm. There was something to keep the people pulled together then. It's not there now. Everybody's independent now. They don't need help. They need to keep their neighbor, but they don't neighbor like they used to. Mm-hmm.
That's sort of something that's gone everywhere.
It's gone. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because people used to would depend on people. If they lost their barn, if it blew down, they'd come in and have a working and build him another barn back the next day or two. Mm-hmm. If their house got burned up, they'd come in and have a house raising. If their neighbor got sick and couldn't work his crops, they would come in workings and work his crop all out in 2 or 3 days. 15 or 20 people come in. The women would all come and bring food and have a big dinner, and they'd all work this man's crop out in a day or two. It ain't that way anymore. If you was to get sick now and you had a crop, you just well forget about it, because you ain't gonna be no help. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot different than it used to be. Mm-hmm. I can remember seeing 15 or 20 people come into cornfields around here, 5 or 6 mules to plow the corn, cultivate it, and the others are hoeing it. And they'd clean a cornfield out in 2 or 3 hours, you know. Mm-hmm. But it ain't that way anymore. Of course, people don't farm like they used to either, you know.
Mm-hmm. How do people farm now?
It's all with equipment now. Mm-hmm. You can, one man can take care of his hay crop. Used to, you'd have to have people could come in when you bale it, 4 or 5 people hauling it in the barn for you, storing it for you. Now you can roll it, you can cut it, bale it, roll it, and do it all by yourself. Same way with corn. You plow your corn with equipment, you plant it, one man. You can come in and pick it. You just don't need help like you used to. Mm-hmm. Farming's so much different. Mm-hmm.
Are lots of people farmers around here now?
No. Most people that are farming here. We got one or two people on this creek that farms for a living. The others are farming because it's either a hobby mm-hmm. or wanting to make work for somebody. Some of the renters live on the property, give them something to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you farm for a hobby?
No.
Okay. are those your chickens out there?
Yeah, I got chickens and geese and guineas and peacocks.
Mm-hmm. Back to the time when people were leaving, how did people keep in touch with their family who left?
Write letters.
Write letters.
Yeah, they'd visit that mailbox every day.
Mm-hmm.
Rain or shine, they'd go get them letters. Mm-hmm. It was very important. Used to, the mail was carried to here on mules. And the post office down at the end of the road here was named Keck.
Mm-hmm.
And the post office where the mail started originating from was called Bays. And a fellow would pick up the mail bags at Bays Post Office, ride through here, rain or shine, sleet or snow, to Keck and pick up the mail there. And ride right on to Jackson on a mule. It'd take him he'd come through here about 8 o'clock in the morning. He'd come back through here about 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, time he went to town. And when he got here, he still had about 7 or 8 miles to ride, or 9.
Mm-hmm.
So, people, the farm people in here then would, they had cream separators and they'd separate their extra milk and cream and ship it out in 5 gallon cans. I've seen a mailman with 3 5-gallon cans of milk on his horse,
mm-hmm.
plus him and all of his mailbags. They'd carry a 5 gallon can on each side and one laying on the saddle horn, and plus all the mailbags.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty well all year long. Now in the summertime, when baby chicks would start being shipped in, they come through here riding with 400 or 500 chicks, baby chicks in boxes on their horses. Everything came by horse. And if you had big freight coming, it usually came to the railroad station over there, to the depot in Jackson. Railway Express. But that was the two sources. And when they get them Sears and Roebuck catalogs or Montgomery Wards, them horses, them old mules just break down with them big catalogs. They'd be so thick, and everybody'd get one, you know, a book. Mm-hmm. They was real heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd just load their mule down with them catalogs. Sometimes they'd be riding a horse with it loaded and leading a mule and it'd be loaded to try to get all the mail through, you know.
Mm-hmm. During that time, how were people making a living? I mean, I know a lot of people couldn't, so they left, but those people who stayed here, how did they do?
A lot of them made moonshine.
Okay. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, there's a lot of moonshiners in here then.
Mm-hmm.
They'd make a run of whiskey and they'd probably $5 or $10 a gallon at that time. I don't know, but I've stayed with moonshine still all night making whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
But they done a lot of things.
We came up to visit my mom's cousins a few weeks ago. My mom came with me, and I was asking her how they survived, if they were so poor during that time, because her mother's brother, he had, there were 11 of them, 11 children, and so she's like, I don't know how they survived. I think they just farmed tobacco. But when we talked to her cousins, they said no, it was moonshine.
it was moonshine. It was a lot of different ways. You had some people could make a living at trading. I've left here when I was 8, 10 years old, riding behind my dad on a horse, going through the country and buying calves. Now he'd buy a calf for $3 or $4, bring it over here and keep it for maybe in the spring, set it that fall, he might get $25 out of that calf, you know. They'd make it by trading, they'd make it by timber, They take that small timber that wasn't big enough for saw logs and stuff, and they'd hew it down and make cross ties and sell it to the railroad company. They had a yard over here at Jackson, and they would haul them ties from here to Jackson. A lot of people would, on wagons. They'd haul 8 or 10 ties over on a wagon and dump them off and maybe get $2 or $3 a tie in them, which is pretty good, you know. Some people had little, they call them truck mines then, which they wasn't truck. They'd go under the ground and mine the coal and bring it out and deliver it for $5 a ton on a wagon with a pair of mules and a road wagon. $5 a ton delivered, and they could put out maybe a ton or 2 ton a day. They could make $10. That was better than working for $2 or $3 a day, you know. So there's a lot of little jobs around, service jobs for people to do. I knew one man, all he ever done to get his money was shoe horses. Everybody in the country would take their horse to him, shoe him. He'd shoe the horse for 50 cents a horse. Some people had corn mills. They'd grind the meal a day or two a week. And maybe another day or two they'd do something else, but it was a lot of service jobs that they could make a kind of scratch out a living out of.
With the coming of modern conveniences, those little jobs weren't.
They all went down the drain. You don't need horses shod anymore at that volume, and not many people burns coal anymore. Everything's gone electric or gas. Few people has wood stoves, but that's just more or less because they want one. Not because they have to, because they can time they buy their chainsaw and cut the wood and buy their stove and everything. They put about as much in as they could heat, buy the gas or electric for, you know.
Have these roads out here always been there?
No. Not the way they are now.
Yeah.
The roads is pretty well where they were back in those times. But the improvement is 100% better now.
When were they paved?
When?
Mm-hmm.
540 was paved in about 65 or 66. Up until that, from 47, no, 48 and 49 till about 66, it was a gravel road. And of course, before the 40s, we didn't have no road out here at all. It was in and out of the creek. In and out of the creek, and it was just pure old truck ruts. One or two people on the creek had a vehicle. Courtney Holbrooks had a big truck down there. When he'd go to town every Saturday morning, it'd be loaded down with people going to do their grocery shopping and everything. Claude Ballard had one down there. They done most of the hauling or most of the going and getting for people. And it pretty well kept them busy too, you know.
When the roads got better, how did that change this place?
Well, people got to getting a little old vehicle of some kind, and they could go to town, Jackson, get them a job. If they had too many eggs or too much milk, too much butter, they'd take it over and sell it. It changed it a lot. You could get your stuff to market. And whatever you bought at the market or wherever, you could get it back home without a big problem. You know, the more convenient it is to do things, the more it gets done.
Do you think that, How long, when people were leaving during that time you were talking about, how long were they leaving? I mean, like, did lots of people keep leaving up till like a certain time period? Was there a time when people stopped leaving?
People has left, from in the 40s, in the early 40s,
mm-hmm.
up until in the 80s or 90s, I guess, that was the period that they left in.
Mm-hmm.
Don't seem like people leave now like they used to. I don't know if the people, if we don't have enough, as many people or whatever, but it seems like all the people here now is going on to getting, most of them is going on to college now, like young people. And
mm-hmm.
used to, instead of thinking of college, the first thing they thought of was a job,
mm-hmm.
dating or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But now, most of the kids are thinking college.
Is the population pretty equal regarding the ages, do you think? Or is there a higher percentage of older people or younger people? That you've noticed?
I'd say around here, the biggest portion of the people are younger people. I'm
mm-hmm.
talking about right in my own neighborhood, you know.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because they're not that many older people here.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest portion of them is younger people.
Were most of the people who left in the 40s and 50s, were they a certain age? Or was it
in working age.
Working age.
Yeah, raising their family age, you know. But you're talking about 40s down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just about everybody I knew left here, raised a big family away from here, you know.
Do you have any relatives who have always, I know you said you did.
Have what?
Relatives who have always stayed here.
Stayed here?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a brother and a sister
mm-hmm.
that's still here.
Okay. Did they ever go and have jobs other places?
Well, my sister didn't, but my brother worked in Louisville. Then he got drafted into the Army, and when he came back from the Army, he went to college.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got a job with a coal company and stayed here. He got a degree in teaching. But then he went to work with a coal company as a land management and stayed here.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife, she taught. And I've got a sister and her husband teaches up in Franklin, in Carlisle. My brother-in-law teaches in Carlisle. My sister teaches in Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
Ohio, and they're retiring. They've already got their home built to come back here.
Mm-hmm.
Up here.
Is there anything about this area that has stayed the same since you were younger? Since you were young?
Well, there's not much.
Mm-hmm.
Time, you know, changes all things, and it's took its change here. We've had a lot of the roads have improved. They're not even like they were.
Mm-hmm.
The mountains have been mined and have been changed a lot. The people has moved in and moved out and died. And so there's been a big change in here. So people stays away from here 25 or 30 years and they come back in here, they don't even know where they're at, you know. It's changed so much.
Do most of the people who live here, do they have roots here?
Here?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. I married someone, you know, that was had roots here.
Because they had less people out farming?
There wasn't that much to change in it because most of the people that back here had big families.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of them had the kids just so they could have the work hands.
Yeah.
You know? But a lot of the renters left. And that might have affected them some because I can remember when just about everybody had two or three renters on their property, you know, some of them they'd even do their feeding for them and milking and everything, you know. And others would just farm for them. But they depended on the renters.
Mm-hmm. Do you keep in touch with your relatives who live in Oregon? And
yes.
Do they ever come back to visit?
Occasionally. We have a family reunion every year or so, and most of the time they're all there occasionally. Sometimes there'll be one maybe that can't come due to sickness or something. But we all stay in contact with each other.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall any sorts of organizations that came into the area to help out? Like, other people I've interviewed talk about missionaries.
Grassroots and missionaries.
Yeah.
And
do you have any memories of
them? Yeah, yeah. We had a church, still got a church down here. It's Grace Bible Church. They've been missionaries there ever since I can remember. The first two that I remember was Leon and Florence Cylinder. Come in. Come in, Dean. Casey, see what Dean was. I motioned to him and he didn't see me. Come in. Hurry, the door must put a glare on him. What's going on?
They want me to steal your wagon. Guitar's up on.
Go get it.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you know so you know where it's at.
Okay. What are you gonna do?
Well, start stripping the back one. One needs some
putting. Hold the backer stops up?
Yeah. Yeah, they tore his up when I was sick.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, he got some boys come up there and he put some backer in. They pulled both wagons up and never got half a patch of backer in 2 days' time.
Hmm. We'll see you.
All right.
Okay.
Y'all want pop or something?
I'm okay.
No, I don't.
So, were there any other types of people who came in trying to...
Where was we at?
The missionaries.
Oh, the missionaries. Well, I can remember. Have you got it done?
Yeah.
One time during the 40s, they had a mattress factory come in over here at Jackson. It was run by the government. And you could, a man and his wife or child could go over there and they'd show them how to make the mattress and furnish the materials and they had the machine to sew it with, and they'd let them make two or three mattresses over there for them.
Oh.
And then they had a little cannon factory up there. You could take your vegetables over there and they furnished the equipment to pressure can it in metal cans, just like you buy at a store right now. And I remember Daddy used to take beans and pumpkins and everything over there and can it. And they'd show you how to use their equipment, and you'd pay some little something for the cans was always too paid for. Then we had these, the missionaries came in, they was, I was given a helpful hand to the needies. They'd visit the schools every once a week, have their little Bible studies. Anytime somebody got sick, they always had a car. And if they could get the car to their house, they would, and take them to the doctor or to the hospital in Lexington or wherever. But they was always helpful to the community. But like I say, everybody's got their own cars now, and pretty well, most people are independent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You hardly ever see a missionary or something now without you go to church. They used to come and spend the day with you, eat dinner with you or whatever, and now you never see them. Like.
Mm-hmm. How long did that? Do they do that, come in and
meet
people and really get to know people? When did they stop doing that?
Probably in the 60s, or early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
People just didn't, people got on a faster gate in life.
Mm-hmm.
They got their vehicles, they got their jobs, they just got independent and they didn't have time, I guess, for their neighbors, you know. The visitations just went down to nothing anymore.
Do people go to church as much as they did then? Like, would church is a big part of the of life back then?
Yeah, church was a bigger part of life than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of preachers in here that would go and preach funerals, preach on graveyards, that didn't have a church, but they was a preacher.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go and preach in their home. Used to, when somebody died, you didn't take them to the funeral home. They'd lay them out in one room of their house. They'd call a preacher and he'd come and have services there that night, and next morning they'd have services, take them to the cemetery and bury them. They didn't move them off this creek here. They didn't embalm them or everybody kept most of the pillars of the community kept a stack of lumber in their barn. They called it casket lumber. It was poplar boards, big, wide. And they'd take two or three of them big wide boards to make a casket.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go to one of the department stores and buy the material and the padding to put in it, and they would line that casket with that silk looking cloth. Underneath that they'd put cotton, and then they'd wrap that casket in that gray material or blue or cream colored, And they'd bury somebody for $25, you know. Mm-hmm. And the work was all donated. All the neighbors would come in and dig the grave. They dug the grave in a way that they dug the vault in the grave, in the bottom of it, and they'd lay boards on top of the casket. So the vault was formed right in the grave, and then they put the casket down in there and put the boards on it and throw the dirt in. But all the work was donated, and even most of the time the casket was donated. The neighbors would chip in and buy the material to cover the casket and the hinges for it and the handles. So the expense wasn't great. But now it costs $6,000-$7,000 to bury somebody.
Mm-hmm. Most people are buried around where they lived, is that right?
Yes.
Yep. Family plots?
Most of them had family plots, and or they have some cemeteries that's kind of community. Mm-hmm. We've got two or three community cemeteries down through here that sometimes somebody will die that don't have any connection to anybody. Mm-hmm. Or don't own no property. And they've always had some of them around. Or sometimes a church will have a cemetery that if it's a member of the church dies, they'd bury him in that cemetery.
Do your children live around here?
Yes.
All of them?
Yeah, we had six. We lost one boy about 2 years ago. He got killed in a four-wheeler accident. Mm-hmm. RV. Mm-hmm. He got hurt in July of 2000, and he died in June of 2001. He stayed in a coma for 11 months.
No.
And then my wife died in 99.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got hurt in the following. She died in March of 99. He got hurt in July of 20th of 2000.
How old was he?
He was 42 when he got 41 when he got hurt.
Oh.
And I have two girls and three boys that still live here.
Mm-hmm. So have they always lived here too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they were born in the 50s and 60s, mostly?
Yeah, one oldest one was born in 56,
mm-hmm.
and the youngest one was born in 63.
Mm-hmm.
One of my daughters works at the Citizens Bank, and one is off on sick leave from the hospital, and one is a state road worker. And one is a disability. And I guess that's all of them.
And this is your grandson?
This is my grandson, Casey Noble.
Okay.
He was Brittany Howe's big guns football player.
Oh.
Yeah. He's going to college this fall. He works at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and he's a security guard up here for a coal company up on our property up here.
Mm-hmm.
Doing some reclamation work.
Where is he going to college?
Lees.
Okay. Right. Well, I don't really have any other questions for you. You want to tell me anything else?
Well, I've hit and missed around so much, I don't know where I'm at.
Really, what I was trying to focus on is on, because a lot of research is done on people who left. counties in eastern Kentucky and went to work, like, you know, in Dayton and in Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah.
But not much is done on people who have stayed, who were alive and stayed during that time. And it's actually kind of hard to find. I've been having trouble finding people who have stayed here and never left. Lots of people have left and come back, it seems like.
Yeah.
But I know there are people who
stayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like my mom's cousins who live here, they've stayed. But I haven't been able to interview a lot of them because a lot of them are actually sick right now.
Well, I always heard that good things happen to the one that's got the patience to wait, and that's what we did. But I'm glad that I stayed, you know. I've seen all these changes. I think I've lived in one of the most interesting areas of it, of anybody. That's just the way I feel about it. I saw when you'd be scared to death that your brothers and sisters were going to come down with diphtheria or a whooping cough or something and die, there was no antibiotics or anything for them. My dad almost died of gangrene. That was before penicillin came out. I've seen it when you couldn't, it'd take you a half a day to walk from here to Jackson, now you can go to the moon. They went to the moon and back.
Mm-hmm.
We've got all these modern conveniences and the modern medicines and modern technologies, such as space, even television. I used to have to run over a mile of wire here to get a TV picture that you could watch. And now you stick up something inside of your porch and you got the whole world there,
mm-hmm.
even internet on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we have